Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani, all rights reserved. Chapter 5. Looking somewhat Frankensteinian with her swollen face, black eye, and neat row of sutures arcing across one cheek, Callie left the motel early the next morning, leaving a pile of bloody towels, an enthusiastically clawed chair, and a note for the proprietors describing in detail why no charges for them would appear on her credit card bill. "Call me overly sensitive," she told the cats, "but I don't like Interstate 70 anymore. Let's take I-80 instead." And so they did. Somewhere around Agalia, Nebraska, the van whipped by a furry lump lying alongside the road, and Callie's sixth sense instantly alerted her that the animal wasn't dead. She hit the brakes, screamed when David dug his claws into her stomach, and cringed when the other cats and their carriers careened forward and slammed into the front seats of the van. When she ascertained that they were all right, she rapidly backed up on the berm. As she jumped out of the van and ran to the furry lump, she feared her superior animal intuition had deserted her, and the animal was not only dead, but dead to the point of bloated decomposure. However, a hasty examination revealed that the lump was an almost dead cat who was so pregnant she looked ready to burst at any minute. "Oh, joy," Callie muttered sarcastically as she picked up the pathetic creature. "Just what I need." Fearing the cat could die at any second, she immediately christened her Justine so she wouldn't die without a name. Justine Beauregard was a class whore. How Callie envied her. She even envied her when Justine got pregnant for the first time in junior high, because Justine obviously knew where babies came from and Callie did not. Although the booklet that came with the sample of sanitary napkins that all the girls got in health class later that year explained the mystery, it made no difference in her sex life. While Justine had sex with the entire football team in the back of the school bus, Callie tried to lose her virginity, but nobody wanted it. When she asked herself why, the reasons came thick and fast. She was a big, gawky, intellectual nerd. She didn't know who her real father was. Her mother didn't know who she was. And her uncle was feeling her up while she played with his gerbil. Undoubtedly, all of these elements conspired to stunt her sexual development and rendered her undesirable at a time when everyone was having sex everywhere with everyone, except her. Using the resources in her well-stocked medical kit, Callie stabilized Justine enough that she could turn her attention to locating a motel. Within a relatively short time, she located a rundown establishment that boasted the only amenity that mattered to her, a layout that lent itself to sneaking cats in and out of rooms unseen. "We don't allow no pets here," the proprietor declared as the biggest roach Callie ever saw disappeared into a bowl of rotting fruit after scurrying down the counter and leaping over an ashtray overflowing with chewed cigar butts. "Thank God for that," she exclaimed. "I have horrible allergies." "And we ain't got no maid. She and her kid got arrested for selling dope and can't make bail," he added, as if this were a perfectly normal event in the hospitality industry. "No problem at all," Callie replied cheerfully, while inwardly giving thanks for this stroke of luck. Her cheerfulness made him eye her suspiciously. "Because of my allergies," she added as she rummaged through her purse. "I like to use my own cleaning products." He stopped staring at her black and blue face when she held up her gold MasterCard. "Feel free to take a piece of fruit," he offered after she signed the registration. Callie passed on the fruit and then passed on the room until she purchased the supplies necessary to make her new quarters even marginally clean. Even so, the cats lifted their paws gingerly the first few times they ventured out of their carriers onto the stained carpeting, and she dreamed about toilets every night. Rather than resulting from any lack of self-esteem, though, she attributed those dreams to the cigar butt she found floating in the commode when she first entered the room. After a week of solicitous care, Justine recovered so well she demonstrated her gratitude by giving birth to 6 healthy kittens. "Darn," Callie murmured to the new mother as she examined the tiny, still wet bodies. "I ought to spay you right now." As Callie quickly discovered, traveling with 12 cats definitely slows you down. Before she left Agalia, she purchased 100 pounds of dry and 2 cases of canned cat food, 100 pounds of kitty litter, 2 more litter boxes, a carrier big enough to hold Justine and the kittens, and enough toys to furnish a feline daycare center, all of which she hoped would get her to New Hampshire and tide her over a few weeks once she got there. Although she initially made the purchases with visions of setting up a little in-room home away from home for her feline charges every night, 2 days later she conceded that the hassles of sneaking that many cats and all that paraphernalia into a motel far exceeded any benefits. From then on, she checked into a motel just long enough to take a shower, then drove to a rest stop and slept in the van. The first night she did this, she let George out of his carrier to roam the van while she slept. "You'll protect me if someone tries to break in, won't you?" she asked him. Kelly didn't need to see the gleam in the cat's eyes to know that George would not protect her. On the other hand, she knew for a fact that he'd scare the life out of anyone who opened the door and encountered him hellbent on getting out. That was enough. Much to her surprise, though, his kinder, gentler alter ego materialized and slept beside her. Not only that, he seemed to enjoy it so much that she soon felt guilty about denying the other cats this small comfort in their otherwise dreary lives. By the time they crossed the Mississippi River, all the cats slept with her. Admittedly, it took several nights for them to work out who would sleep where, but after a few fights among the adults, bedtime settled down into a routine. As luck would have it, the kittens decided they preferred sleeping on Callie's head to sleeping with Justine, which Justine, unfit mother that she was, didn't mind a bit. While they traveled, Callie confined the reluctant mother to the carrier to remind her of her maternal obligations, but when they stopped for the night, she let the cat out to exercise. Justine would immediately leave her offspring to fend for themselves while she put the moves on David and George. At first, Kelly snuggled all the kittens in a fleece blanket that she kept next to her pillow so they wouldn't become chilled while their mother flirted shamelessly. However, they soon squirmed out of their makeshift nest and into her thick hair, which they found much more comforting. Being both neutered and nice, David responded to Justine's brazen behavior with a collection of horrified and confused looks, and soon hid whenever she approached. George, on the other hand, succumbed to his natural leanings toward aberrant sexual behavior, and he and Justine spent a great deal of time rubbing up against each other. Somewhere in Illinois, Kelly decided that she enjoyed sleeping with a bunch of cats, even George, who had started licking her toes again. All the other adults purred and kneaded her, while the kittens made comforting, sucking baby noises as they nestled in her hair. By the time she reached Pennsylvania, though, she'd made up her mind that no one in Addison would know she had all those cats. As far as she was concerned, 4 cats was maximum for normal. Once people got more than that, they risked finding themselves labeled collectors and the subject of articles in psychiatric journals. Mary W. was presented at the teaching hospital after the health department received a call regarding the foul odor emanating from her house in South Boston. Inside, public health officials found Mary W. and 34 cats. The patient had not bathed in months and evidently lived on a diet of canned and dried cat food supplemented with chicken livers and catnip that Mary W. grew in her kitchen sink. A former professional singer, Mary W. would sing arias from Madame Butterfly and Turandot to the animals for hours each evening. She described this ritual in detail to the author, referring to it as environmental enrichment for my pussies. No, 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 no. Callie S. couldn't risk that. She already had enough to live down. Callie stopped at the granary on her way through Addison to ask Penn the best way to let Joe McDermott and Billy know she'd be staying at the house for a while. A half-truth. The whole truth was that she'd be staying at the house until she figured out what to do with her life. But she didn't want anyone to know that because it sounded like something a 20-something English major rather than a 40-something veterinarian would say. She couldn't decide whether it was a good or bad omen that Joe and Billy were standing in the granary when she walked in. "I'm back," she casually announced, and said something she found most amazing. "I'm going to stay at the farm and fix it up," a thought that had never occurred to her before. She only knew she didn't intend to work on equines, but beyond that, she hadn't a clue. She looked at Billy, smiled, and gestured. "You want to work for me?" He smiled back and nodded. "Yes, very much." She made a circular motion in a vertical plane, then one horizontally. "Do you want to ride your bike out to my place, or do you want me to pick you up?" He repeated the vertical motion. "I'll take my bike." Knowing how much his independence meant to him, Callie pointed to the location of the pocket where she used to keep her milk money in nursery school. "How much do you charge?" He pointed to Joe. "Ask him." Somewhat surprised by this new addition to their intercourse, Callie turned to the indicated individual who had observed this exchange with a bemused expression on his face. "Billy said I should ask you what he gets paid for doing odd jobs now," she explained. Minimum wage plus $1 an hour. He won't take any more, Joe replied, then added, That's how you and Billy communicate, with all those different looks and signals? It works well for us, she answered, but I'm sure the two of you worked out your own system. Joe looked slightly embarrassed. Not as good as yours, but enough so I can keep records for him. Most of the time he uses his pictures to tell me where he's going to be, plus the phone if he needs to reach me for some reason. Billy never went anywhere without a camera. With the advent of disposable cameras, he'd been in his glory because everyone in town would give him one for his birthday, Christmas, or any other special occasion. Surely he had pictures of everyone and everything in town, and Callie easily could imagine him and Joe using them to communicate. I can see how you use the pictures, but how can Billy use the phone? She asked the question she opted not to ask him the first time they met. You taught him the numbers from 1 to 10, Joe reminded her. I taught him my cell phone number. If he needs me, he keys it in, says his name to himself 10 times, and that gives me time to answer. Then he presses the 1, 2, and 3 keys in succession, which tells me it's him. I then go to where the pictures he'd given me that morning told me he'd be and see what's up. Is that what happened when he found my parents? Callie didn't know why she wanted to know this, but she did. Joe nodded. Thanks. Her voice quivered slightly as she strained to talk past the lump forming in her throat. I'm glad you were there for him. Penn immediately broke the embarrassed silence that followed her remark. Say, Callie, you wouldn't be interested in working mornings till Susie comes back, would you? Who's Susie? She responded, when memories of all the local residents bearing that name only elicited images of fur-covered ones. Justine Romano's granddaughter. Callie couldn't believe it. Could Justine Beauregard, the class whore, possibly have married Bernie Romano, the class idiot? Could he possibly be the father of her children? When she nonchalantly broached the subject of a Beauregard-Romano liaison, Penn assured her that, yes, indeed, Bernie, now a lawyer, God help us all, did sire all 6 of Justine's offspring, a revelation that made Callie feel somewhat clairvoyant. When she nonchalantly broached the subject of a Beauregard-Romano liaison, Penn assured her that, yes, indeed, Bernie, now a lawyer, God help us all, did sire all 6 of Justine's offspring, a revelation that made Callie feel somewhat clairvoyant. Penn went on to explain that the aforementioned Susie was the offspring of Justine and Bernie's firstborn, who had arrived when Justine couldn't have been more than 13. Susie wants to be a veterinarian. She fell off a horse and broke her leg. Penn concluded with these facts as if they might somehow tip any thoughts Callie had about working for him in his favor. In reality, his remarks had had the same effect as if he had told her that the Marquis de Sade's granddaughter wanted to become a nun and had broken her hand counting her rosary beads. Maybe it could happen, but genetics and environment argued against it. When his comments caused Callie to look at him even more stupefied than before, Penn added hopefully, I'll give you a good salary, plus anything in the place it cost. The mention of that particular perk caused Callie's eyes to roam the part of the old granary now filled with building and gardening supplies, just what she'd need to fix up the farm. She now had enough money to pay full price for anything she wanted, but she'd been pinching pennies for so long she automatically saw the value of the offer. But before she could answer, Joe laughed. Hell, Penn, if she can't make up her mind, I'll take the job. No way! Penn immediately shot back. You couldn't tell a premium pet food from a chili dog. I need someone with Callie's expertise. He turned back to her. Unless you plan to open up your own practice right away. You look kind of peaked, though. I thought maybe you might want to ease into things. Does the Lord work in mysterious ways or what? Callie thought to herself. She owed her peaked appearance to the faint greenish-yellow tinge on the left side of her face, divided by the finest white line of a scar. Although she felt pleased that her wound had healed so well, the remnants of her brush with the criminal element did make her look somewhat strange, although not in a way anyone with any manners would come right out and mention. Joe McDermott studied her, opened his mouth to say something, then shut it again. Billy raised his hands and started to gesture, but then put them down and just looked at her worriedly. Close call. You're right, Penn, Callie babbled, ignoring Joe and smiling reassuringly at Billy. I do want to ease into things. When do you want me to start? For someone trying to convince herself she wasn't crazy, she hadn't gotten off to a very auspicious beginning. You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.